Thanks for listening to the Sandy Clef Podcast, brought to you by Argonaut Wine and Liquor. They have what you're looking for, whether it's wine, spirits, or craft beer. Argonaut has it. Argonaut delivers, too. Proudly serving Denver for over 50 years. Shop online at ArgonautLiquor.com.
I'm bored with the same old thing. I need something different and fun.
Argonaut has it.
I'm also looking for great selection, service, and low prices.
Argonaut has it.
Oh, some of my buddies are coming over this weekend. Query, I need to find Jack Daniels at an amazing price.
Argonaut has it. Argonaut has free parking, and they deliver. Mm.
Where are they located?
760 East Colfax Avenue, or shop online at ArgonautLiquor.com. Argonaut has been serving Denver proudly for 50 years. Remember, you want it. Argonaut has it.
And good morning. Welcome on this Tuesday morning in the Mile High City, September 13, 2016. Sandy Clef with you on your home for the best coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Denver's sports station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. We have a blockbuster show in store for you today. We'll be visiting later on with Mike Tirico of NBC Sports and with Sean Salisbury of ESPN Houston, SB Nation, and Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. There is no other way that Sean presents himself, whether it be with us or in any other form or context, except in an unfiltered way. We look forward to that. Mike Tirico, one of the new members of an all-star nine of NBC telecasters on Football Night in America, alongside Dan Patrick, Tony Dungy, Rodney Harrison, Bob Costas, Mike Florio, Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth, and Michelle Tafoya. And later on this year, Heather Cox will join their telecasting team for some of the Thursday night games that will be telecast via NBC and the NFL Network. So Mike will have some thoughts in our second hour, but our first hour, we present Dr. Rick Perea, sports psychologist to the stars and many of the leading teams, both in professional and college football. It's good to see you. We chatted yesterday. I don't know how you maintain the schedule that you do. Even you, you're the most high-energy guy I know. Even you sounded a little fatigued coming off week one in the National Football League. And I know you're a football fan.
Yes, sir.
First and foremost, you played, you've coached, you've been around pro football and college football teams for many years now. For all the things that we criticize regarding the NFL, they got week one right this year. Kickoff week went off in a smashing way. I know you were in Seattle the other day for the Dolphins and Seahawks, and that's one of the great football atmospheres anywhere
The
country at any time.
No question. It was a great week. You know, we started it off on Thursday. We flew out to Seattle, 6.5-hour flight from Miami, by the way. But it was a great first week. We went into Seattle, a hostile environment, and competed. Really had them on the ropes. Didn't come away with the W, but I think we learned a lot as a team. But absolutely, the NFL had a great week one. A lot of my clients, pretty much most of them, about 80% of them, came out with a W, and we reached our goal for week one. But, yeah, Sandy, I'm fired up. It's exciting. College football's off and running. And I'm just here to help give you some insight on the mental enhancement. And as I say all the time, the checkup from the neck up.
I think the three most fascinating games of the weekend, the games last night certainly weren't among them. It was Denver, Carolina, New England, Arizona, and the game you saw in person. You're down there on the sidelines watching Miami go up against Seattle. Games decided by 1 point, 2 points, and 2 points,
yes,
respectively, and in chronological order. Did those games, in your opinion, say more about the superiority of the winners in a conventional analytic sense, or more about the psychological strength of the winning teams? Seattle being the team most vulnerable to being upset by Miami, But what did those three games say about the psychology of the Broncos, the Patriots, and the Seahawks at this point?
That's a great question. Psychology played a huge role in all three of those games. If you look at the Broncos game, now, again, there's so many variables. I want the listener to understand. There's so many variables that go into winning a game. Sometimes, you know, people say it's the third special teams, third defense, third offense. But it's on every single play, each one of those players has a mental preparation or a mental mindset on how they approach that play. And that plays such a big role. If you look at, let's fast forward all the way to the end of the Bronco game. The kicker for the Panthers, you know, they line up for the field goal. He kicks the ball. The Broncos call timeout right before the snap. So he actually hits the field goal, grazes the right upright. So in his mind, he makes a mental adjustment. Okay, I hit the right upright. I better adjust. He adjusts, over-adjusts, hooks the ball, misses the field goal. So I want people to understand, our bodies do not just deploy themselves. It all starts in the mind. We have to make up our mind to make a decision, which literally leaves the brain, the pituitary gland, leads us to the central nervous system. The central nervous system deploys energy, sympathetic, parasympathetic, and then the body acts on those decisions. So there's psychology there. Let's look at our game, the Dolphins in Seattle. If someone were at that game, I'm going to tell you something. The last drive, Seattle had to convert 2 fourth downs.
Right.
They're driving on us at the end of the game. We had that game in the bag. You know, I know the game's never over, but we had that game. Here's what happened, Sandy. If you watched that drive in person, you could see the nonverbal communication of our defensive players. They were sucking wind. And I want the listeners to think about this. Throughout the preseason, rarely does a first-team defense play together.
That's right.
For more than a quarter.
Exactly right.
And then all of a
sudden.
Even
in the third game.
Yeah.
The Rams in here to play Denver, by early second quarter, their ones were out on defense.
Yeah. And so if you look at the first game, we're basically deploying our first-team defense out there for 4 quarters. Now, remember, I've told you this before and shared this with the listeners. It takes 16% more energy to play defense than it does offense. Defense are reacting to the moves of the offense. Offense is assignment football. They know where they're going. On defense, sure, we have gap responsibilities, we have coverage, we have zones, but we're reacting. It takes 16% more energy. So if you look at that last drive with Seattle, they're moving down the field on us. They get a first down somewhere around our 18-yard line, went to a TV timeout. I'm looking out there at our defense. Half of our defense has their helmet off. This is during the timeout. The other half got one knee. The other three have their hands on their hips. If I'm Seattle's offense or the coaches on the sideline, I'm pointing over at our defense and going, let's smell blood. Look at those guys. They are sucking wind. And here's the thing, Sandy. When you suck wind, that's a physiological response.
Right.
But it starts in the mind because you know what? You can say, you know what? I'm sucking wind, but, man, I'm going to fight through this with everything I have, and we did not fight through it, and consequently, they scored the game-winning touchdown.
When you've talked about this before, I always think of the Lombardi line, fatigue makes cowards of us all, and he's implying a physiological and psychological effect.
Yes, absolutely.
Fatigue makes cowards of us all.
Yeah. I mean, again, effort, energy, and attitude all start in the mind. If you've ever been around a teammate that works hard, that has a great attitude, that busts their butt, that, trust me, that starts in their mind. That starts in a decision in the brain. So we've got to understand bodies just don't deploy themselves. And some people will say, well, the offense wore the defense down physically. Doesn't happen. It starts in the mind. You have to literally in your mind go, wow. These guys are getting 4 yards a crack. We can't stop them. That starts in the brain, and then that goes through the pituitary gland, the central nervous system, into the remaining of our body. So great, great question, Sandy, because I can tell you this. Mentality and psychology played a huge role in those teams that won and the teams that lost.
I want to get into Denver and Carolina a little bit because I haven't talked to you, and when we spoke yesterday, I didn't ask you about this. But I thought I changed my pick on the basis of how I thought you would have reacted to all of the pregame talk coming out of Carolina in particular. Ron Rivera thought it was unfair that they had to open on the road, even though they knew they'd have to play Denver on the road this year. They didn't want it to be the opener. I thought that was a sign of weakness. Even Cam Newton denying that it was a rematch, saying both teams had changed. Okay, fine. But I thought he should have been embracing it rather than running away from the idea of a rematch. Forget about revenge, just a rematch, and acknowledge that and say we're loaded for bear.
Yeah.
We got a quarterback in his first game. We want to open. We don't care where we play the game.
Absolutely.
Denver's fine. Anyway, we'll pursue that as we continue. Dr. Rick Perea in studio. Sandy Clough with you on your home for the best coverage of the Broncos in the NFL. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan. Dr. Rick Perea in studio is our first hour guest. Mike Tirico at 11:15. Sean Salisbury to follow later in the 11 o'clock hour. We have phone lines open at 303-331-7104, a temporary talk line, total beverage text line at 29588. As we continue on, Kubiak's timeout at the end of the game on Thursday night. I know that tactic doesn't always work. In fact, it fails more often than not. But in this case, Gano makes the field goal right after the timeout is called, but he pushes it a little to the right, and they get a high snap on the actual attempt, and he hooks it left. Effect of the timeout, psychologically, can we measure that? Or can we never be sure?
We can't be sure because, you know, here's the thing is defenses, obviously defensive coordinators plan for that. They always try to do that and they think they're going to get, quote unquote, in the head of the kicker. Kickers prepare for that as well. They know that's coming. It's a tactic that's used widely in college and professional football. So we can't say for sure that it was a quantitative measurement because he overcorrected. We can't say qualitatively he was affected because he did. You can see on the replay, again, I've been around football quite a few years. He did come across the ball. He hooked it, just like us golfers, Sandy, when we hook the ball. But, again, essentially it was effective because he missed it. That's the end result, so we have to go with that. But only the kicker and the holder and the snapper would be able to tell the truth if it was really something external that influenced that versus their process.
Carolina's heck of a football team. Newton is a great quarterback. But I thought their approach psychologically to the game, from what we could read and see, was rather odd. They didn't embrace the notion of a rematch. Rivera complained about having to go on the road for the opener. And you got the feeling that even when they were ahead at halftime 17-7, that they viewed the whole thing as more of an inconvenience.
Yes,
the idea of
yes.
having to make that long trip out here for the opener rather than playing the Broncos in Denver later on in the season. Did you get that same sense?
Yes.
Before the game?
Yeah, and you know, this brings up a broader topic of how coaches approach games from a psychological perspective and in the words they choose to use with their team. Word choice is so important. When the brain hears words, it believes it. And so if they're negative, the brain will believe it. If they're positive, the brain will believe it. So when a coach says, you know, we have to go on the road versus get to go on the road, those are two different words. And the team will interpret those words very differently. I've been fortunate to be around, Sandy, as you know, I'm around Major League Baseball, the NBA, the NFL. And I hear coaches, managers on a regular basis, you know, depict road trips, East Coast swings in baseball, road trips that are going to be, oh, man, they're going to be tough. I've actually heard a baseball person say, you know, we're going to go on a 9-game East Coast swing, and it's going to be tough. It's going to be challenging. It's going to be one of those times that we've really got to, you know, focus and try to be the best we can be. But they don't approach it like, you know what, let's wake up every given morning, let's compete, and know that we can win every one of those games. And so many coaches, again, Sandy, as you and I have talked many times, have not been developed, have not been coached themselves in their word choice. We call it language reconstruction. You've got to use words that are very positive, that I can, I will, I've been here before, I will do it again, as opposed to, wow, this is going to be tough, because it will literally psychologically activate your team to think, wow, we're going in there into this beehive. It's going to be a tough game. And they have a back door to run out of. Instead of saying, no, we're going there to compete, to win, and we will win this game.
We know Belichick and Saban have a strong connection. And I'm always fascinated. We'll start with Belichick. The other night, you know, he's got two terrific coordinators. Let's face it. Whatever you thought of Josh McDaniels as a head coach here in 2009 and 2010, he's become, if he wasn't prior to his coming here to Denver, terrific offensive coordinator.
Yes.
Matt Patricia, equally effective as defensive coordinator in New England. And Belichick leans on those two guys to be sure. But I thought their whole attitude going in, they don't have Brady, they don't have Gronkowski, they don't have Ninkovich. The offensive line's a mess again.
Right.
And they go in there, and, you know, their quotes are as dull as watching grass grow, but they've got the right mentality. And Arizona seemed uptight, unsettled, easily frustrated. And you get down to that final kick. Collinsworth, I thought, made a great point. You got, as you well know, a long snapper, a holder, and a kicker. When a field goal like that misses, the kicker gets blamed, but often it's a bad snap or a bad hold. We've seen all of that. And Collinsworth made the point when they missed the field goal at the end that you pay the price for going with a rookie long snapper to save a few bucks.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a psychological part of that, too, that the team looks at that. And if we'd had a good snap, we win that game.
Sure.
And they cut a veteran to make room for a younger, less expensive guy.
Yeah.
The psychological effect on that team would be what? Well, potentially.
Well, again, it's you don't have that belief system. We call it self-efficacy. And then it bleeds over into team efficacy. It's a belief system that you can overcome any obstacles in the face of adversity. And again, the mentality of how you approach a game. With New England going in there without all those starters you mentioned, you have to have a mentality that you can believe that, no, we are going to win this game. I want the listeners to think about what this quote. Do you shape your thoughts or do your thoughts shape you? Now, think about that. Most people allow their thoughts to shape them throughout the day. Good things happen, they have a good day. Bad things happen, they have a bad day. So their thoughts shape them, Sandy. New England is one of those teams, and you mentioned Saban and Alabama.
Yeah.
Those are some of the guys that, you know, really buy into shaping your thoughts. In other words, you wake up in the morning and you have a protocol of how you shape your thoughts from a very positive perspective, and you go in, I'll guarantee you, that's all I'll go as far as saying, because New England is a different animal, secretive animal, whatever you want to call it. I guarantee you that New England went in there shaping their thoughts. They were not going to allow the circumstances on the road, not having starters, all those thoughts to shape them. Most teams in the NFL, Sandy, they allow their thoughts to shape them, and that's why they lose on the road. Not because there's actually different variables that go into the game. It's because they are not taking control of themselves mentally. New England is a team that they shape their thoughts.
And I think that was a big part of what happened in the ballgame the other day. And Arian's a very good coach. Ron Rivera is a very good coach. But I thought during the course of the game and maybe even prior to the game, they weren't on the right wavelength. Week one is crazy. You talk about your psychological challenges. Week one. In the NFL, where all kinds of goofy stuff happens. I was listening to a national talk show the other day, and a guy called in and he said, predictions, particularly on week one, it's a fool's errand. And, you know, in part, we do predictions for a living here, and I like to think we put some thought into them, but I couldn't agree with the guy more.
But
to me, the psychology of the game enters into it more in week one, particularly with the limitations of the preseason that you talked about.
Right.
But nobody's in peak shape. They can't be. But they haven't played full games.
Here's something that, again, I want our listeners to think about. Many of these coaches, and again, I'm around the league every week, been for years. Now, here's one of the limitations. Many of these coaches don't know what they don't know. And that's a really toxic place to be, Sandy. The coaches like a Belichick, like a Saban, like a Gase, and again, I know Gase hasn't won his first game yet, but he's a forward thinker. He's a creative thinker. Gase knows what he doesn't know, and he's willing to raise his hand and say, I need help. But many of these coaches, Sandy, they don't know what they don't know. They can't miss what they've never had. Because some of the coaches say, well, I've been around the league 20 years. I've done it this way all the time. Yeah, but you haven't done it at a peak level. You haven't done it with less anxiety. So if you don't know what you don't know, you can't work on that shaping your own thoughts. I want to remind the listener, do you allow your thoughts to shape you, or do you shape your thoughts?
All right, we'll talk about Saban, a little bit about Bill O'Brien in Houston, and that looks like a team to beat, perhaps once again in the AFC South this year. Dr. Rick Perea in studio with us for the hour. Mike Tirico of NBC at 11:15. Later in the 11 o'clock hour, Sean Salisbury of ESPN Radio Houston and SB Nation. Want to remind you to sign up for the Colorado Land Tire and Service, speaking of predictions, Pro Pick'em. Presented by Low T Center. It's the Fan Pro Pick'em with dozens of weekly prizes, including a master-built electric smoker and free Papa John's pizza at 1043thefan.com. Thanks for listening to the Sandy Clef Podcast, brought to you by Argonaut Wine and Liquor. They have what you're looking for, whether it's wine, spirits, or craft beer. Argonaut has it. Argonaut delivers too. Proudly serving Denver for over 50 years. Shop online at argonautliquor.com.
I'm bored with the same old thing. I need something different and fun.
Argonaut has it.
I'm also looking for great selection, service, and low prices.
Argonaut has it.
Oh, some of my buddies are coming over this weekend. Query, I need to find Jack Daniels at an amazing price.
Argonaut has it. Argonaut has free parking, and they deliver.
Mm. Where are they located?
760 East Colfax Avenue, or shop online at argonautliquor.com. Argonaut has been serving Denver proudly for 50 years. Remember, you want it. Argonaut has it.
Dr. Rick Perea, our in-studio guest this hour. We'll get to some of your texts on the Total Beverage text line at 29588. We'll get to Nick Saban in just a second. We were saying Gase, after the game the other day, didn't view that as a moral victory of any kind, coming this close to upsetting Seattle in Seattle.
Yeah. No, for us, there was no upset about it, Sandy. We went in with a mental mindset that we were going to win that game. That was our full approach. We planned on winning it. We practiced to win it. We did our mental preparation around winning it. No, there's no moral victories with the Miami Dolphins this year. We're showing up to compete and win every Sunday, Monday, whenever we play.
Nick Saban went off on his team after a big win against a clearly overmatched opponent, said he had never been more disappointed in his team after a win. Saban, one of those guys, I think, who is often, almost always, in fact, harder on his teams after they win than he is after they lose.
Yeah.
And they don't lose very often.
Right. You know, Nick comes from the old school, if you will, but he's also one of the guys to raise his hand and ask for help, like I said before.
Yeah.
He really believes in the strong mental approach. He believes in leadership training, communication training. So he's one of those guys that I think still has some remnants of the old school, the Bo Schembechler school, the Woody Hayes, that kind of mentality. But, and I think that's what happens. He catches himself like, I really got to be hard on these guys because, you know, we don't want to get full of ourselves because we got some tough games coming up. So he will revert back to that, but I think he always catches himself.
I don't know if you saw the video, but he went after Lane Kiffin late in the game.
Yeah.
And after the game, he was asked to characterize the conversation, and some euphemism, I can't remember what it was used, and he said, no, it was a rear end chewing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you have a couple alphas there. You got a couple alpha dogs. At least from Lane's perspective, that's how he views himself, and that's the key point. Is he views himself as an alpha dog. I think it's a good mix. I've been very proud of the way Coach Saban has handled that relationship. I think he's given Lane a lot of leash, and Lane's really responded well for the most part. But you got a couple of guys that are alpha dogs, and there's going to be some clash. And as long as you understand that, accept that, put it behind you, next play, next game, you're able to move forward and use both of your competencies and acumen to be the best you can be as a team.
We got a question on the Total Beverage text line at 29588 from the 561. How about Jack Del Rio's two-point call and what that does for a team the rest of the season? And Del Rio, after the game, and no reason to dispute him on this, said, as we were driving or before the drive began, I said, we're going to score here and we're going for two. It wasn't a spur-of-the-moment decision. He alerted his offensive group that that's exactly what was going to happen and what they were going to do.
Yeah. And, again, that's a positive affirmation. When he says, we are going to score, we are going to go for two, his coordinators hear that in the headset. The players hear it from their coaches. It becomes a positive affirmation. Sandy, I have to come back to talking about the brain again. People need to understand the difference between the brain and the mind. The brain is the anatomical piece, you know, the hypothalamus, the pituitary gland, the literally the autonomy. The mind is the input that we put into the brain, education, experiences, all that. If we tell the brain to do something, it will believe it. And that's why we use techniques. When we say shape your thoughts, we have techniques that we teach performers how to shape their thoughts so the brain believes it and goes with it. When people go to a movie, that movie's not real, but they think the brain thinks it's real. The mind knows it's not. The mind can say, that's not a coach, that's Kevin Costner. But the brain will go with it auditorily, visually. So when you say those positive affirmations, we're going to score, we're going to go for two, that builds and fortifies those belief systems of the coaches and the players alike.
Today's conversation is deeper than Chicago pizza. That's from Baker in the 720. We like that.
I like it.
Thank you. Shape your thoughts, a simplified, usable concept I can use every day. Thank you. That's from Dunk. From the 720, is Houston the team to beat in the AFC South, or are the Bears the team to beat up on? You were around the Bears a little bit last year.
Yes. Yeah, I think Houston is going to be a very competitive team this year. You know, for those of you that have not followed our talk recently on here, Brock is still one of my guys. I still work with him, and he is just, if you watch his nonverbals on the field, he's in command. They got a really good defense, so I look for Houston to be a really good team. You know, Chicago is going to really miss Adam Gase. I'll put it that way. I know
Cutler's going to miss him.
Yeah, Cutler will miss him tremendously. The offensive coordinator they got in there, I know him too. He'll compete. He'll do the best he can. But missing Adam Gase is going to hurt that team. So I think they'll be competitive because I think Fox will at least get them ready to play in general. But I think Houston is a team that is only going to get better as the season goes on.
You were on championship teams last year collegiately, Alabama, professionally, the Broncos. Good question from the 303. Quick thoughts on the team chemistry coming off a Super Bowl title, resetting, rebuilding that with a different locker room. How tall an order? That's from Ty. Good question.
Yeah, great question, Ty. It's a tall order. Quick little piece of education. We don't research chemistry in performance and sports psychology. We research cohesion, but I get what you're saying. So the team cohesion is vitally important. It's so important to reset and come back after a championship year. The humanistic tendency is to relax a little bit. We're champions. We're world champions. But you've got to reset. You've got to dial in and get back to that wolf climbing the hill. Because when you get crowned, you're kind of the wolf at the top of the hill.
Yeah.
You've got to come back, regauge, reframe to be that wolf at the top of the hill. And the teams that are successfully able to do that will have a chance to repeat. I'm not sure Denver has that this year. You know, I was with them last year as their performance psychologist, and I've moved on to new mountains to climb. But I wish them the best. But it's going to be key. Their leadership is going to have to carry them. And I don't mean necessarily with coaches. I mean leadership on the team, on the defense. Oh, yeah. They got to have a verbal and vocal leader that can step up. You know, they miss a couple guys. You know, their three technique and Danny. Those guys they're going to miss. So the leadership on the defense is going to be vital. Trevor, if he's going to be the guy throughout the season, I would want to develop Trevor in terms of his leadership skills and his communication skills. I think physiologically he has what it takes, but I think he needs to develop the communication aspect and the leadership for Denver to really have a legitimate shot to repeat.
I have to ask you about that as a follow-up. Trevor Siemian and Matt Paradis apparently are very, very close friends, give each other a hard time, and including an exchange after the game the other night. Paradis had a great game the other night. Pro Football Focus gave him one of the highest grades they've given out to a center for any game ever since they started grading people at that position. He was a dominant guy. You were around Paradis a little bit last year. Center quarterback. Now, Paradis was in his first year last year as a starter off the practice squad, and he's dealing with Peyton Manning, Brock Osweiler for a time. This year, he's the more experienced of the combination center quarterback, and that relationship with Simeon is how valuable, in your opinion?
Oh, it's extremely valuable. You know, getting back to Ty's question about cohesion, you know, you got, and it doesn't surprise me, those guys have ended up being good friends. They have very similar personalities, very calm, very regulated. Yeah. But, you know, when you have that cohesion, I mean, the first person that touches the ball on every play is a center. The second person that touches the ball, assuming that it's not a shotgun formation where they're snapping to the running back, is the quarterback. And so those two guys being on the same page, having that social cohesion. Here's the key, Sandy, I want people to understand. Cohesion has two levels. There's task and social cohesion. Task cohesion means everybody does their job, which is so important. If you look at defense, people have their gap responsibilities, their coverages, their zones. Social cohesion is the highest level of performance we look for. People that reach social cohesion, those are the teams that tend to win championships. And so for Paradis and Trevor to be able to connect the way they do on a social level really makes that cohesive, because here Paradis calls the line calls. You know, Trevor calling, you know, checkoffs up to the line of scrimmage. And if those two are in total cohesion, you got a great start to the snap of the ball and the really projection of where everybody's supposed to go in their assigned play.
I know Ware is a favorite of yours, and I thought in the first half the other night he struggled. Of course, he wasn't out there for the preseason, basically didn't practice. And yet he came on and finished the game strong, had a sack and a half for Denver. And you're smiling because you love DeMarcus Ware featured. And I thought he was the most compelling character on the America's Game piece that we talked about last week that's running now on the NFL Network. Ware, Miller, and Manning, they're all good, but Ware stands out.
Yeah. You know, DeMarcus had a really great awareness last year, and I don't have enough time to share it on this show, but he had a really great awareness. I mean, he's always been a Hall of Fame type of player. He's going to probably be first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
But he's got so much integrity, so much honesty and authenticity to his personality. We've become very close. But what I want people to understand about DeMarcus Ware is in his 11th year last year, he was able to really become more of a verbal and vocal leader. And, you know, he didn't have to do that. He could have just been keep doing it by example. And he even said, you know what, Doc, this is kind of how I do it. But DeMarcus took the next step in his career. He was able to become a little more verbal, a little more vocal. And I can tell you this, that built the cohesion with number 58 on the other side. And that's one of the reasons
Which number 58 acknowledges in America's Game.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that, here's again, back to Ty's question, that social cohesion, task cohesion is vital. So DeMarcus, to me, is last year's uncrowned MVP because he brought this team together, in my opinion, from a social cohesion aspect.
Our show podcast, we remind you, are brought to you by Argonaut Wine and Liquor. And we encourage you, if you miss any of our shows or want to go back and re-listen to the words of wisdom provided in this case by Dr. Rick Perea, you can do so again on our show podcast brought to you by Argonaut Wine and Liquor here on Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, your home for the best coverage of the Broncos and the NFL. Folks, you know how razor companies keep putting out new models and raising their already high prices? Well, our friends over at Harry's don't believe in upcharging. They just made a bunch of improvements to their razors, and they're keeping prices exactly the same. Still just $2 per blade compared to $4 or more you'll pay at the drugstore. Harry's five-blade razors now include a softer flex hinge for more comfortable glide, a trimmer blade for hard-to-reach places, a lubricating strip, and a textured handle for more control when it's wet. What I love about shaving with Harry's, and I've been doing it for the past 9 months, is that they can get to those hard-to-reach places in a close, smooth way. Electric razors just don't get you that kind of shave. Harry's compares so favorably to any other shaving solution you've ever tried, particularly in terms of the quality for the price you pay. Founded by two friends to offer guys a great shave at a fair price. Quality always 100% guaranteed. If you don't love your shave, Harry's will fully refund you. Harry's starter set produces an amazing deal for you right now. You get a weighted razor handle of your choice, moisturizing shave cream, three precision-engineered five-blade cartridges, and a travel cover, all for just $15. And for a limited time only, there's a special offer for fans of the show where you can get it for less. We partner with Harry's to give you $5 off your first purchase with promo code Sandy, S-A-N-D-Y. Go to harrys.com right now and enter code Sandy at checkout to claim your offer. That's H-A-R-R-Y-S.com. Code Sandy. The good doctor, Dr. Rick Faria, in studio with us for this first hour on a Tuesday afternoon in the Mile High City. Tuesday morning, actually. Getting a little ahead of myself. touch of fall in the air.
Yeah.
Football season underway. It's all good. Want to give you the chance to talk about DK2, achieving peak performance and optimum functioning.
Yeah, DK2 is the organization I run here in Denver. We have an office off I-25 in Arapahoe Road, and we just help all performers. I mean, if you think of, we're not just with sports, we work with CEOs, CFOs, anybody who performs. I mean, pilots, surgeons, first responders. We do a lot with first responders. So anybody who has a high-risk, high-reward type job, we help them perform better, and that's what we do here.
Good text on the Total Beverage text line at 29588 from the 720. Stink, Mark Schlereth, made a great point this morning that you can get beat mentally or physically, and I think what makes the Patriots so successful is that they won't be beaten mentally. Their preparation ensures a solid mental approach to every game, and that wins out a majority of the time. Sure, they can be beaten physically once in a while, but their approach has proven successful more often than not. That's from Nate. 720. That's it in a nutshell.
Right? Yeah, it absolutely is. And again, I want people to understand, can you get beat physically? The person across from you has more speed, more quickness, more strength. Absolutely. But when you wear down a defense, like when you're running the ball and you're getting 4 yards, 5 yards, 6 yards a crack, that starts in the mind, and that starts to wear on the mentality of a defense, believing that they can't stop you. And that's when it starts in the mind, and you say, man, we're having a hard time stopping these guys, and that transfers into the central nervous system, which then gets you on that sympathetic side, increased heart rate, increased respiration and muscle tension, and you will never perform to your peak levels when you're on the sympathetic side. You always want to live on the parasympathetic side.
We're talking about the place kicking earlier in the program today, and about how Arizona went on the cheap, kept a rookie long snapper, delivered a bad snap under pressure the other night, cost them a ball game. Denver in a similar situation. Aaron Brewer is gone.
Yep.
Kreider's his replacement. Colquitt's gone. Dixon's now the holder. An effect on Brandon McManus, another guy I know you liked last year.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny because, you know, coaches will say, GMs will say, oh, our punter is a very important position. Our kicker is a very important position, our long snapper. But then they really try to shave the dollars at those positions. So I think it's something that's typically happens in the NFL. They look at shaving dollars from those positions, but they find out throughout the seasons those are vitally important positions. The NFL needs to get better at how to analyze mental enhancement and mental performance. We do that through assessments, and I think once they find out, I would say within the next 10 years, they'll be up to speed with the Googles and the Apples of the world, because we really need to learn a lot from those top companies in the corporate world, Sandy, in terms of professional sports, how we analyze people, emotional health, their psychological health, and we're just not there. So in terms of the snappers, there's a whole psychology. Aaron Brewer was one of the most laid-back, chill guys. You couldn't get him rattled. And so I think they'll miss him at some point this season. But again, the NFL needs to get better as a whole at analyzing mental enhancement and how people regulate their emotions.
In general now, and I know I'm asking you to generalize here, on the collegiate level, with respect to football, is there more of a willingness to embrace the kinds of concepts and ideas you're talking about?
It's very consistent with the NFL. It's very consistent. You know, at the college level, the limitation is money. In the NFL, the limitation isn't money. It's more of the old school mentality.
Right.
I think there's more coaches at the college level that are open to this stuff, Sandy, but they don't have the money to put into it. So at the end of the day, it kind of comes out in the wash. I think what it takes is practitioners, and I call myself a practitioner, is practitioners that can reach coaches and players. You know, we can have all the knowledge in the world, but if we're not building relationships with the players, with the coaches, with the GMs, then we really don't have a chance to be able to share it and meet them where they are. You know, again, you can have someone who's a scholar, but they don't know how to communicate it to an NFL player. So the whole key in our industry is that ability to build relationships with everyone in the building. And if you can do that, then you really got a chance.
We have a good question here. I'm not asking you to comment in a political or social sense here, but from a 720, could you ask the doctor if he thinks Brandon Marshall's performance will suffer because none of his teammates are at least publicly supporting his gesture during the national anthem? Also, will Brandon's thoughts form his actions? That's Newman in Aurora. And again, on a notion like this, is it important for a team to be united? And by the same token, is it damaging if one player is doing it and the rest of the team isn't, or the rest of the team is doing it and one player isn't, as far as cohesion is concerned?
Yeah, great question. You know, being that I know Brandon, and I do know a little bit about the team having been there last year, Brandon has a lot of respect in that locker room. And Brandon is a very convicted person. He has a lot of beliefs, yeah, and he's very strong in them. And, you know, I noticed in one of his quotes today, he says, you know, people don't know what it's like to grow up as a minority. I'd prefer to use the words of color instead of a minority. That's kind of a dated term. But I understand what he's saying. He isn't backing down one bit in his belief systems because he has a very strong belief system. He has the support in that locker room, I got to believe, just based on how he, you know.
Well, he said he talked to Virgil Green about it. And again, Virgil Green and Brandon Marshall played at Nevada.
Yeah. Yeah.
Colin Kaepernick played at Nevada.
Yeah. I think if it were a player that wasn't as convicted as Brandon is in his belief systems, then it would have a chance to divide. But Brandon is very convicted. I think they're able to separate that. He is a man. He is an individual who has very strong belief systems. So in this case, I do not think it will break up any social cohesion with the Broncos.
How significant, in your opinion, we'll let you run on this, was the social cohesion in producing Denver's championship a year ago?
Oh, my gosh. It was
compared to other championship teams you've been around.
Yeah, it was vital, Sandy. I mean, if you look at us personnel-wise, in my opinion, you know, you look at our offensive line last year, we were kind of in disarray.
Sure.
Week three, week four, took Ryan Harris, took him from right tackle, moved him to left, and Evan Mathis got hurt, and Lou Vasquez was in and out of the lineup. I mean, we were just a lot of moving parts there. But I think at the end of the season, towards the last fourth of the last quadrant, yeah, of the season, into the playoffs, you know, DeMarcus played a big role in terms of his leadership with 58, and 58 obviously made a big difference in the Super Bowl. So social cohesion, I think, was the reason. If I had to pin it on one factor, and of course there's many variables, but on one factor that went into us winning a championship was that social cohesion that was bred, you know, by DeMarcus and 58 and the whole defense. You know, Malik Jackson played a huge role. Danny Trevathan, those guys all played a huge role in that social cohesive unit. And then the offense came together enough,
yes,
to hold up their part, and we just took off. So it was the piece, and I can tell you this, Sandy, and I'll end on this. Every championship team that I've been associated with, it was that social cohesion piece that we have reached. We'd reached the task, people do their job, but it was the social cohesion where, hey, I love you, I'm going to play with you, we're going to play together, let's go. That type of mentality is hard to stop on the performance level.
And if you doubt that and you haven't seen the programs that we talked about last week, worth the wait, more from the coaching and front office point of view, America's Game featuring DeMarcus Ware, Peyton Manning, and Vaughn Miller. And a lot of what Rick's talking about gets brought out, particularly by DeMarcus Ware, I thought. Little bit by Elway, I think, in the Worth the Wait piece, but most especially by DeMarcus Ware in America's Game. They're two companion pieces, but you'll find, if you doubt what Rick is saying, you'll find affirmation, as it were, through watching those two programs. My friend, it's a pleasure. It's
Thank
a treat
you,
all the time.
Always.
Listeners love it.
Always.
We'll do this again soon.
We will.
Throughout the season, it's always fresh stuff. Appreciate your time today. I know how busy you are.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it.
I don't
it.
Know how you do it.
I do it by being positive. At positive affirmations, I can do it. I just tell everybody out there, let's go.
Let's go. We have an hour ahead. Stay with us. Mike Tirico of NBC, Sean Salisbury of ESPN Radio Houston, and SB Nation. And again, a reminder to sign up for the Colorado Land, Tire, and Service Fan Pro Pick'em, presented by Hooters with dozens of weekly prizes, including a Masterbuilt electric smoker and a Rhino-Rack ski and snowboard carrier at 1043thefan.com.